Yo, 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 what's good? What's good, everybody? Welcome back. Welcome back to another episode of the Isaiah Kid Podcast, man. Shouts out to everybody. Shouts out to everybody that is listening and so forth. I gotta, man, we gotta jam-pack episode. I may have to do multiple parts. That's how jam-packed this episode is. Obviously, it's NFL free agency. So it's late at night. I wanted to be able to recap all of the big time moves. I wanted most of the big time dominoes to fall, and so forth. So we got a lot of signing, new faces and new places to talk about and so forth. Seeing some monster deals. Monster guaranteed dollars, agents are getting paid, players are getting wealthy. Kirk Cousins, man, Kirk Cousins' agent is an all-time legend at this point. I mean, is he not? I mean, oh my goodness, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about Kirk Cousins and the dollar figures that he is going to accumulate over his career and what he's getting now and so forth. So we'll have plenty of time to get in that, man. But Kirko, man, Kirko Baines, Kirk Cousins, he is getting to the bag, man. Okay, but first and foremost, I'm your humble and highly favorite host, Isaiah Kiv, the Isaiah Kiv Podcast. I hope everybody out there is having a good day. Like I said, you guys will get this on Tuesday, hopefully. I'm pretty sure you get it. It'll be Tuesday when this episode drops. So I'll be able to get that to you guys. Also, previous episode, I encourage you guys so greatly to leave comments, leave questions, and I will answer them. You guys did not fail to do that. You guys left comments and questions. I'm gonna pick a handful of questions. I can't pick every question, but I will try my best to get to answer as many questions as I can on a separate episode, because this is just going to be too jam-packed and I want people to actually hear their questions get answered. So that is what we're going to do. But let's just get right into the nitty-gritty of things. And as I said, I watched the day play out, free agency on Monday, and it, like I said, it was a total frenzy, right? And player movement, off-season coverage has never been greater in the sport, right? NBA free agency, NBA free agency used to be really, really hard to top. Man, NFL free agency, NFL off-season, just in general. I mean, from firings to the hiring process to then the free agency process and then the draft. It's becoming really, really hard to nitpick with the NFL offseason. There's really no offseason. But the first move that I want to discuss is Russell Wilson to the Pittsburgh Steelers. And as I told you guys ago, a week ago on the preview on my last on my recent on my most recent episode, I told you guys that Russell Wilson, he would draw interest. And some of the interest, most of the interest would be based off the fact that he's dirt cheap. He'll be cheap. He's gonna be cheap. So it's a low risk. And with this deal with the Steelers, it's cheap. I don't, it's a 1 year deal, but I think they're paying him the veteran minimum. So I don't even know, but it's not a lot. It's so low risk. And there's so many angles to this deal. Right, and I'm gonna cover a few. But as I told you guys, I figured Russell Wilson, was a prime candidate. Well, I figured the Steelers was a prime candidate to sign and get Russell Wilson. I mentioned the Falcons, the Raiders, right? But the Falcons were always linked with Kirk Cousins, and it seemed inevitable. Or I'm not gonna say inevitable, that might be too strong, but it seemed pretty likely, pretty probable that Kirk Cousins was going to be a Falcon. And here we are. He is. Raiders, I kind of threw that out there because they are in need of a quarterback, but in division rival, maybe they feel like they can do better. So they got Steelers land Russell Wilson. And with this move, to me, I think this is more of a reflection of where the Steelers are as an organization and where they stand with Kenny Pickett than it actually does with Russell Wilson, right? I think this is more of a reflection, and it says more about the Steelers and their comfortability with Kenny Pickett as their quote-unquote quarterback long-term than it actually does Russell Wilson. And the reason why I know that is because they went out and signed Russell Wilson. The Steelers clearly weren't confident enough to just roll into the season with Kenny Pickett as their starting quarterback. And as I told you guys, last week, that the word of last week's episode was desperate, desperation. And I told you guys, typically when you make moves, when you draft, when you're making big time decisions and it's out of desperation and you're being desperate, it usually doesn't pan out or end well. It usually doesn't. And for instance, typically when you look at guys just from looking at their attributes, their traits, the archetype, when you look at guys like Kenny Pickett and Mac Jones, who are relatively, when we in draft talk and draft purposes, relatively, they are guys that are at least day two, day three type of guys, right? But instead, they were picked at Mac Jones at 15, Kenny Pickett at 20. As I talked about in the previous episode, desperate and desperation. When you make moves under desperation or you're making moves in like, out of spite of you being desperate, it usually does not pan out well. It typically does not pan out well. And with both Patriots and Steelers, Belichick had no succession plan after Brady's departure, right? Part of his succession plan was ruined because he had to move off of Jimmy Garoppolo. That was the succession plan. But after that, He didn't have a succession plan to the succession plan. So he went out, signed Cam Newton. Cool, that didn't work. Okay, Mac Jones in, right? He was desperate. He had to take a quarterback. And with kind of the same thing with Pittsburgh, where Ben Roethlisberger retired, it was time for them to draft a quarterback. They needed a guy under center. And typically, when you draft any player in the first round, right, but especially quarterback, You're trying to hit a home run, right? Like, you're trying to hit a home run. And with guys like Mac Jones and Kenny Pickett, they're standoff doubles, right? They're doubles. They're not home runs. They're not even triples. They're doubles. You're going to hit a double. They're a double. And not to say that these type of quarterbacks don't have success or can't be good, because no, you can. Like Kirk Cousins was, he's similar kind of archetype, similar kind of, you know, attributes and skill set, right? He turned out to be a really good player. He's making a lot of money. He turned out to be a really good player. But Kirk Cousins was drafted in the fourth round for a reason. He was drafted in the fourth round, right? And with these two guys, it was never going to pan out for these guys. Like, the best case scenario for a Mac Jones, for a Kenny Pickett, was for them to be like a fringe top 12, top 14 kind of quarterback. That was best case scenario, you know, if everything went right. And obviously, that doesn't happen all the time. It's really hard to get it right. Everything right? So ultimately, with, you know, the Steelers organization, they're about winning Super Bowls. And granted, I think their last playoff win, is back in 2016 to the Kansas City Chiefs. This is pre-Mahomes, right? So, like, I think the Steelers beat the Chiefs at Arrowhead for their last playoff win. But granted, Steelers haven't won a playoff game in about almost going on 8 years. But they're about winning Super Bowls. And trying to win at that type of level and drafting that type of quarterback in the first round, that's not really the recipe for success. And I don't care what these teams tell you. I don't care what the Steelers say. I don't care what they say to the media, whatever. Russell Wilson is not like they can say whatever. They can say Russ is going to battle with Kenny Pickett for the starting job. No, you don't sign Russell Wilson if you have full belief in Kenny Pickett. And honestly, I don't know why would they. But you don't think Kenny Pickett, or you're not, your confidence is not sky high on Kenny Pickett, and then you just sign Russell Wilson. No, you sign Russell Wilson to be the starting quarterback. And I think this, like I said, this move kind of is showing more. It reflects a little bit more on the influx and where the Steelers are at quarterback. And honestly, you know, now Russ in 2024 is not the same guy that we all watch in Seattle be one of the most spectacular ad libbers, playmakers we've seen at the quarterback spot, right? But since Big Ben fell off a cliff, right, the Steelers have been missing a lot from that quarterback spot. It's like the moment Big Ben was not in his prime and he was on the back burner, and then he eventually retired, and then from that point on, like, the Steelers have been lacking some just decent quarterback play consistently. Right. And like I said, I don't think they're going to get prime Russell Wilson. As I told you guys last week, ultimately, Russ has never been a guy that was good on script. What made him elite all of those years in Seattle was the fact that he was this great ad libber. He had this innate ability to extend plays with, you know, he had great pocket presence. Like, that's what made him elite and unique. That Russell Wilson in 2024, even granted now his first year in Denver, like I said, overweight, right? It doesn't matter, you know, people can say Nathaniel Hackett this, Nathaniel Hackett that. It doesn't matter if Bill Walsh was Russell Wilson's play caller his first year in Denver. Doesn't matter. Even Bill Walsh, as the great play caller he was, he couldn't have helped Russell Wilson that first year in Denver, because Russell Wilson couldn't help himself. He was overweight. He came into that year overweight, out of shape, and he couldn't do the athletic things that it requires for him to be elite. This past year in Denver, granted, you look at the numbers and you're like, oh man, 26 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. This Russ looks okay. He's fine. He's okay. He's yay okay. Well, try telling that to the Denver Broncos, because granted, those numbers may, like, just looking at them, like, oh, he threw 26 touchdowns and 8 interceptions, right? That's a pretty decent year. No, a lot of, like, if you really watch the games and you watched Russell Wilson in the Broncos, a lot of it after the first, if the first read wasn't there, there's a lot of just check downs. And ultimately, you didn't see a guy that was escaping and extending plays and being able to push the ball down the field. That's not what you saw. So, For this Steelers team, granted, if Russell Wilson plays like he did last year, this defense, they got a good enough coaching staff, they got a good enough defense, they got some players on offense where and Arthur Smith as a new offensive coordinator, they have all of these pieces in line. If Russell Wilson plays like he played last year, they'll probably be a 10-win team, right? But when you're looking at your division and you have a guy like a Joe Burrow and a guy like Lamar Jackson who's just won his second MVP, at Russell Wilson's best, he is still not as good as those guys. So when you look about and when you think about the competitiveness in the division and how can the Steelers win a division and get a high playoff seed, well, it starts within the division. And like I said, I don't think elite Russell Wilson is coming back, right? I think those years are over. And if you get something similar to what he did in Denver last year, you have the third best quarterback in the division, right? Like, when healthy, Joe Burrow is better. It's not even close. When healthy, Lamar Jackson is better than Russell Wilson. It's not even close at this point. And then with Cleveland, you know, they got a good defense. Kevin Stefanski had a really good year as a coach last year. But the question mark is Deshaun Watson, right? The question mark is Deshaun Watson. And really, ultimately, he's played like one or two good halves as a Cleveland Brown in 2 years. So who knows what that looks like, right? And he's coming off a major injury, right? So to me, this Steelers team, granted, I think Russell Wilson is an upgrade from Kenny Pickett, right? I think he's an upgrade. I will admit that. But they still, to me, feel like a 10 at best, a 10-win, maybe, like I said, at best, an 11-win team, right? They feel like a wild card team. They don't feel like a team that's going to win their division with Russell Wilson. So, and with this loaded AFC, not just the AFC North, but the AFC as a conference, I don't know. I don't know how they fare. It really just depends on the playoff matchup, right? But I think that's the misconception. Because there's a group of people, there's a percentage of people that's like, man, Russell Wilson, he wasn't bad last year. And it's like, okay, well, for what the Broncos were paying him and for what they gave up, relatively, yes, he was bad. He underachieved. When a team is paying you that amount of money, you got to be elite. You better damn sure be elite. And Russell Wilson was far from that. Now, if you're someone like me, I have admitted that, hey, Russell Wilson, I don't think he's the same athlete. And with him not being the same athlete, that ability that he once had that made him special as a playmaker, it's just not – it's no longer there. And not to say he can't do it one or two times a game, but that's just who he is at this point, I feel like. That's who he is. So to me, the Steelers, I think this move, it's kind of a omission of essentially like, hey, Pickett's not our guy, right? And with Russ, we feel a little bit more confident with Russ. And we kind of know that elite Russell Wilson isn't going to walk through that door in September. But at least we give ourselves a fighting chance with more competent quarterback play. That's what it feels like, right? And Russell Wilson, his personality, it's going to be really interesting how his personality meshes with the Steelers organization. Because when you think of the Steelers, still, you know, steel curtain, you know, they're blue collar workers, Pittsburgh, like even like the city, just think about the city of Pittsburgh, right? It's probably the total opposite of Russell Wilson, right? I think a lot of people kind of think Russell Wilson's a bit phony. It's kind of act, but it's like, I mean, this is how the guy is. This is how he is. This is what he is. This is who he is. So you got to take him for that. If it walk like a duck, look like a duck, quack like a duck, it's a duck. So that's just what it is with Russell Wilson. So we'll see how the personality matches, right? How the character matches with the organization. But football-wise, the Steelers were 10-7 last year. I think with Russell Wilson, like I said, if he can have similar production to what he gave Denver last year, granted, like I said, he was really mediocre. A lot of the film, a lot of the tape shows that he wasn't really pushing the ball down the field. And if the first read wasn't there, he would just simply check it down, right? And so if they get that, I mean, they could still be a playoff team and win 10 games, maybe 11. But that kind of seems like their ceiling, which, I mean, that's what they did last year. So we'll see what happens. Let's get to Kirk Cousins. Signs a 4-year, $180 million deal with the Atlanta Falcons. And as I already said at the top of the episode, huge shout out to Kirk Cousins' agent. Boy, has he worked miracles. By the time this is all said and done and Kirk Cousins' career ends, he's going to accumulate just around about, like literally over $400 million. And not to say that Kirk is a bad player. I mean, he's panned out as a fourth rounder. He's turned out to be really good, right? Made some Pro Bowls, put up some numbers. I mean, only got one playoff win, but he squeezed as much money as he can and as he could from that one playoff win, and he continues to get paid. I'm not mad at it. Now, the Falcons have drafted, over the past several years, they've drafted highly touted skill guys in the draft over the past few years, right? Bijan Robinson being the most recent guy, but they've drafted Kyle Pitts, Drake London, all of these guys, all three of these guys, highly touted coming out of college. Their defense last year looked capable and solid at times. And I think the one thing was that was kind of head-scratching to me about this Falcons team was they went into the year with Desmond Ridder confidently. And, okay, I thought that was a mistake. But with Kirk Cousins, you have a guy, the Falcons signed a guy. Now, granted, he's coming off the Achilles injury, huge, right? But you have a guy, arguably, that was playing the best football of his career before he got hurt, right? He just had came off the win versus the 49ers at home, Monday Night Football, big time game. Probably one of Kirk Cousins' best games of his career. Like, he was really playing really well for the Vikings, and he's coming off of the Achilles injury, which is usually viewed as one of the worst and catastrophic injuries that you can have in sports, right? That's possible, right? that is up there. The Achilles, the torn Achilles is pretty up there. And I would say with a guy like Kirk Cousins, it may not have the same impact or the same effect that it may have on a guy like Aaron Rodgers. And I'll explain why. The very thing that is Kirk Cousins' like red flag, or the issue with Kirk Cousins, or a weakness of Kirk Cousins, is his inability to be mobile. His inability to be mobile, extend plays, right? In the pocket, he is the quintessential pocket passer that we have in today's game. And he's a sitting duck. If you can generate a constant pressure, you will make it hard on Kirk Cousins, right? You'll make it hard on him. And, you know, that's the knock. That is the universal knock on Kirk Cousins' game, is that he can't really extend plays and, you know, be mobile or agile outside of the pocket and make something happen, right? As well, Aaron Rodgers, he's been praised for a lot, like he's been praised for his ability to extend plays and escape the pocket. He's known as one of the best passers outside of the pocket, on the move, and so forth. Well, with the Achilles injury, it obviously dictates your mobility. And with Kirk Cousins, his game was never predicated off of his ability to move around and extend plays and move outside the pocket. So, granted, this injury is huge, right? It's a major injury, but Kirk, it won't affect his pocket play, right? It won't affect his accuracy. Kirk Cousins is one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the league over the past few years. His Achilles injury won't impact his accuracy. So if Kirk is, let's say, 80, 85% of the Kirk Cousins that we have been watching over the past few years, that is an upgrade for Atlanta. And that has a lot of value. So I know a lot of you guys are probably like, well, Isaiah, is it going to work? I don't know. I think it should work. Now, I think there is some things that we need to watch out for. Obviously, Kirk, right? Can't, like, what he looks like coming off the Achilles injury. But as I explained, mobility, escaping the pocket, athleticism, even if there's a dip in athleticism or mobility, his game was never predicated off of that. That's not what's gonna make Kirk Cousins his money. That's never what made Kirk Cousins his money, right? So that element, kind of like, okay, whatever. That's a whatever, right? Because it was never predicated. That's not what his game is predicated off of. You know, Raheem Morris, this is his second time getting a head coaching job. Obviously, I think a lot of people forget that he was in Tampa Bay, right? And it wasn't too memorable. But over the past, that was 2011-ish? So over the past decade and a half, decade and some change, he's done a really good job restoring, you know, his credibility. But I think a lot of people look at the 4-180 and they're like, man, $45 million, that's kind of high. And it is, right? It is. But I feel like given first Kirk Cousins, his open market value was at least $40 million a year. So this is, like I said, it's a bit pricey, but it's on par. Right. And you're only worth what someone is willing to pay you. So you got 45 on the open market. Right. And I feel like with Atlanta, it's easier to make a move like this, given the division that they're in. Right. Their defense was solid last year. They have, as I explained, they have drafted impact players at important skills positions. So you look at your division, you know, Carolina, they're going to be ass water. Like, they're going to be, you can just flush them in the toilet. They're going to be ass. They were the worst team in the league last year. They'll probably be the worst team in the league next year, right? You look at the Saints. Can you really trust Derek Carr and Dennis Allen, especially in big spots? I'm not willing to put money down on that. I can't trust Dennis Allen and Derek Carr in big spots, right? And they got a talented roster, but I just don't trust their coach and quarterback combo. And then with Tampa, who I think is I would say Tampa's the, you know, they're the biggest threat to Atlanta. They've been able to retain a lot of their guys, a lot of their impact guys that help guide them to the playoffs. You know, Mike Evans, Baker, they got some nice pieces. Antoine Winfield, Vita Vea, they have some nice players on each side of the ball, right? So I feel like it's easier to make a move and a deal like this in this type of division versus an AFC West or AFC North, where you got Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs' whole operation. You got Justin Herbert. Like, the quarterback play is just insane in certain divisions. So you can get away with that. A move like this in the AFC North, it would be head-scratching, because you got a healthy Joe Burrow. When Joe Burrow's healthy, the Bengals are, I mean, they are as big as a threat to Kansas City that there is in the AFC when Joe Burrow is healthy. When Lamar Jackson is healthy, the Ravens are at least a playoff team. Like, literally, that's their floor. If they get a healthy Lamar Jackson, at least, at the bare minimum, the Ravens are a playoff team, right? So it's easier to do a move like this or to make a move like this when your division, half of your division is in a flux, right? And then the other team in Tampa, they're good. They won a division last year, but you can beat them. Like that, like, you can beat them. And I have the favorites right here, the betting favorites. Atlanta's the betting favorite to win a division this year, right? So this move, I like the move. Like I said, with Kirk Cousins, yes, it is a risk, right? It's a risk. Anytime you pay a player this caliber of money, especially at the quarterback spot, it's definitely a risk. But as I said, if you were in the AFC North, where there's great, there, you know, from Baltimore and Cincinnati, there's really good quarterback play, and you got some competent management, competent front offices, yeah, we might have a different story. But like I said, half of the division is either in a flux or in an influx, or you just can't really trust the coach and quarterback. And then with Tampa, you know, they're really good. That's your competition. And with the Vikings, replacing Kirk Cousins, people like to talk shit about Kirk Cousins and give so much shit to Kirk Cousins. But watch how hard it's going to be for the Vikings to replace his production. Watch. The chances of the Vikings replacing Cousins the first go around is supremely low. Like, it's really, really low. It's unlikely that they'll be able to find that same production that they got from Kirk Cousins from another quarterback, especially this upcoming year. Right, because they'll probably go out and sign like a guy like Sam Darnold or whatever, and then draft a guy like J.J. McCarthy, right? Like, that's just a scenario. That's what they're like. Come on, no. So people that like to give shit, you know, that gives a lot of shit to Kirk Cousins, you're gonna see how valuable and how hard it's gonna be to replace a guy like Kirk Cousins. It's going to be hard. In terms of headlines, I would say the second or the other biggest move was Saquon Barkley getting a 3-year deal from the Eagles. Now, that 3-year deal, 3 years, $37.5 million, $26 million of that guaranteed. And it could possibly go up to $46 million, right? And there's just so many statistics, so many stats, so much evidence over the past decade and a half. So over the past, like, 15 years, there has been so much evidence compiled pointing to you don't give running backs big-time money. You just don't, if you're in the business of winning championships. Look at the past 15, 16 Super Bowl winners. look how much their starting running back was making. Not much. There's a correlation there. There's a trend there, right? There's a linear pattern there, right? Like, that is, that's reality. That's reality of the running back position. And I hate to sound like this guy. I hate to be like that, but that's the reality, right? There's, like I said, there's just so much evidence compiled over the past 15 years. Like, this isn't like brief. This isn't like a 1 year, 2 year thing. No, over the past 15 to 20 years, two decades, if you are in the winning championship business or trying to get to Super Bowls, typically you don't pay running backs big money. Like, that is what the trend says, right? If you want to be one of those two teams playing on that final Sunday, that's just the trend. And, you know, I think with this deal, we look at the, oh, Saquon got 3 years, $37 million, right? We can look at that. That price is high, right? But even then, he got $26 million guaranteed. So really, it's 3 year, $26 million deal. That's really, that's what it really is. And it could potentially spike into the 30s, but it's, in actuality, it's 3 and 26, right? Not 3 and 37 or 3 and 40. It's 3 and 26, right? Those guaranteed dollars. That's what you got to look at. So, like I said, it's typically not good for business, but I figured the Eagles would make a splashy signing like this, given that Jason Kelce had just retired. You know, Fletcher Cox had just retired. Two notable guys, leaders in that locker room. I kind of figured the Eagles are going to probably do something and try to get active. But you look at Tony Pollard's contract, 3 years, 25, right? Like, that is the market for running backs, right? That's the market. And I think about Saquon's dispute with the Giants last year where he just opted to play on the franchise tag, whatever. Okay, the franchise tag, I think, was like worth like $10, $11 million, right? That was the franchise tag worth. But if I'm not mistaken, I think the negotiations or the offer, the long-term extension at the Giants throughout was 3 years and like $24 million. So, okay, 3 years, 24, 3 years, 26, a $2 million difference that couldn't be negotiated, because essentially that's what it is right here. You get the $26 million guarantee. Like I said, it could potentially spike into the 30s, but you're 27, right? You've had major injuries, you know. Then you're not coming off of necessarily your best year. Why have that? Why continue to go nip and tuck with the Giants? You know, the running backs, you know, around the league, set up a group call, and this isn't right. And just for a year later, just for you to take a deal that was literally $2 million more. That's what all the hoo-ha is about. And, well, people like, well, running backs are worth this and worth that. Well, I always tell you guys, when we talk about free agency and we're having this free agency talks, you're only worth what someone is willing to pay you. You could be selling your house, and you could be trying to say, hey, that house down the street sold for such and such. That ain't this house. The market says this, right? Right? Like, the market is still in the sevens. The price is still in the sevens. So that's what it is. You're only worth what someone is willing to pay. So when people, like, that's why I like the Kirk Cousins signing. Hit on the open market, Kirk Cousins was going to be worth about $40 million. Atlanta paid, they overpaid a little bit because they had to get him from somewhere else. Right? They overpaid a little bit, but they got him at 45. And with Saquon, I mean, okay, you got your deal, but it's effectively the same thing that the Giants offered him. It's effectively the same thing that the Giants offered him. And I just think it's a reality check for running backs. Like, this is right now currently the market. Right? This is the market. So I'm not surprised. I think another thing, when we get, and I don't want to piss anybody on anybody's parade, but in the NFL, when these teams are just signing free agents and signing players, signing dudes, most of these guys are free agents for a reason. And I'm not saying this pertaining to Saquon Barkley, but NFL free agents in the NFL just signing guys in the offseason, it's a 33% hit rate. So, like, a lot of these signings, you know, March 11th, March 12th, March 13th, they look good. And like, man, that could really work. But then, you know, we're halfway into November, and you're like, man, that signing was not good. I remember a couple years ago when the Chargers signed J.C. Jackson, and the Chargers desperately needed some help in the secondary, and J.C. Jackson was on the market. The Chargers signed them, and everybody loved it. Everybody loved the deal. Everybody loved the deal, and rightfully so. At that point, he was one of the best corners in the league. He was the best corner on the market, and the Chargers had got him. And everybody thought that was such a great move. Even myself, I thought it was a really good move. Come to find out that by that same year, by like October, J.C. Jackson, the Chargers had known, like, well, missed on that one. They had known by mid-October going into November. They're like, yep. Didn't hit on that one. So just keep that in mind, everybody. As we continue to talk about these free agents and these signings, yes, all of these signings look really good. But, I mean, you know, 33% hit rate. Gabe Davis, he signed a 3-year deal to the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Kansas City Chiefs were able to retain Chris Jones on a 5-year, $95 million deal. That's big for them. T. Higgins is now requesting for a trade. We do have a Brian Burns trade. The Carolina Panthers decided to trade him and move off him. We'll talk about that debacle that the Panthers have have made. Christian Wilkins to the Raiders. They paid him a lot of money, and guess what? I really like this move for Oakland. For Vegas. Sorry. I really like this move, and it made a lot. When I first saw it, I'm like, oh, okay, Christian Wilkins to the Raiders, right? Whatever, right? I was like, that's a great combination with him and Max Crosby. Max Crosby, I think, is one of the least talked about dominant defensive players that we have in this league. I mean, he is like, he's honestly like a top 5 edge in football, right? So I was like, okay, good combination, good duo. But then I started thinking, I'm like, oh, well, wait. Antonio Pierce is the Raiders head coach. I was like, he was on that Giants team in 07 that beat the Patriots. Well, how did they beat him? The dominant pass rush. Also, when you're really good up front defensively on your defensive line, in certain instances, not all the time, right? But in a lot of instances, it can cover up and mask some of the deficiencies that you may have on the back end of your defense, right? So it can cover up some of your other defensive concerns that may not be solved at the moment. But then also, you got a guy like Max Crosby, you bring in a guy like Christian Wilkins, really, really good, high-end players at their particular positions. Hopefully, some of this can rub off on Tyreek Wilson, the rookie that they drafted from Texas A&M, who had, I would say, a fairly underwhelming rookie year. rookie campaign, right? So you're hoping some of that kind of sprinkles, some of that dust kind of sprinkles off of him and it rubs off of him, right? But and for me, you guys know, I love when teams build from, you know, within the trenches, offensive line, defensive line. I love it. I love it. Absolutely love it. And for the Dolphins, man. And this is like, I'll continue on my rant, but for the Dolphins, this is a move that's, I mean, you let, I was just surprised that they just let him walk. He's a homegrown guy that you drafted, turned out to be really good, and he's an impactful player at a key position. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about the Dolphins just letting him walk. I felt like they lost one of their best players. I mean, I and I'm stunned. It's not that they just lost him, but I'm stunned that like they just let him walk. They drafted him. Like, that's the whole point. Draft a guy at a key spot. Hope that he pans out. Oh, wait, he pans out. He's pretty good. You sign him. The Dolphins just let him walk. And he plays a premium position. Right, he plays a premium position, so the mere fact that they just let him walk, that's for me. If I'm sitting in the front office, luckily I'm not. That'll be a tough pill for me to swallow. That'd just be tough. I don't know. I do not know how I feel about that one. Okay. The Buccaneers, they signed Baker Mayfield to a 3-year, $100 million deal, $50 million of it guaranteed. And honestly, similar to the Kirk Cousins deal, I'm not mad with this. Like, I'm not mad at this deal at all. You know, if he would have tested the open market, I think someone like the Raiders would have offered a similar looking deal. I think they would have offered a similar looking deal. And I take it all into account. And first, let me get some credit where credit's due. Because I wasn't a huge Baker Mayfield guy. Right? I was not a huge Baker Mayfield guy, whatever. But he has matured. He's honed in on his craft. That Buccaneers organization, you know, historically, people may look at them crappy, but looking at that, like, they got a core group of guys that was a part of those, you know, a part of those, that Super Bowl team and so forth. And I think some of that DNA, some of that attitude has just kind of rubbed off of just most of that roster. So I'm not mad with this at all with Baker Mayfield. Like I said, especially in this type of division, I think the division plays a role. You know, I think it does play a role. And worst case scenario, it's a 2-year deal. And, you know, you paid him half of that money, 50, right? It's a 2-year deal. But just evaluating the division and the circumstances of the division, I mean, the Saints, like I said, Saints with Derek Carr and Dennis Allen. Do you trust those two knuckleheads in big games? I don't know. Me personally, I don't think so. I would not trust them. You look at, you know, Tampa Bay. I mean, well, not Tampa Bay, but you look at Carolina. They're a complete dumpster fire. Like, what they're doing as a franchise right now is an absolute shit show. And then, like I said, Atlanta, vice versa. Atlanta is the team that is the Buccaneers' biggest threat into repeating as NFC South champions as we stand today. The Falcons are that team, right? So I think, you know, similar to the Kirk Cousins deal, it makes sense. It makes sense given the division that they're in. Like I said, I don't know if I do this deal if I'm playing in AFC North, right? Because I got Lamar. You get the point. Because I said the same thing about Kirk Cousins. Let's continue. Let's get to these trades then. Let's get to the the big time trade with Brian Burns being traded to the Giants. All right, so I would say the last big time move we had today was a blockbuster trade, actually. Brian Burns got traded to the Giants for a second round pick, which would be this year's pick. It would be 39, pick 39, and a 2025 fifth round pick. And the Giants were going to give him a $150 million extension, and $90 million was guaranteed. And here's what I'll say. You know, free agency, I've tried to cover the notable transactions. Justin Matabuke, he got paid as well. This is the going rate for DNs, D tackles. This is the going rate, right? Granted, I don't think Brian Burns, to me, I don't think he's like a top five edge rusher, right? I don't think he's in that same conversation as like a Miles Garrett, a Micah Parsons, a Nick Bosa, a Max Crosby, as we just got done talking about. I don't think he's in that rim. I don't think he's that tier or caliber of edge or pass rusher. But you know, like I said, this is the going rate. This is the scale, right? This is, and with you trading for him, you knew you were gonna have to pay him. So that's just what it is. I know that price, when I first saw it, I figured it was a bit high. I thought it was pretty high for a guy like for Brian Burns, right? Like I said, not. I think if you were to name like the top five edges in the league, I don't think he'd be there. Maybe top 10, maybe, right? But he's a good player. He's a solid player. Now, I think this trade for me, it's more of an indictment on the Panthers, because Brian Burns, he's the same guy. I don't know if you guys remember, but the Rams offered 2 ones for him. Just last offseason, they offered 2 ones. The Rams were willing to give up 2 first-round picks for Brian Burns, the same guy that the Panthers just traded the Giants to for a second and a fifth, right? And if you're the Giants, this is a pretty easy deal. This is you fleece the Panthers. So not only did they decline the option of giving the Ram or accepting the Rams 2 firsts for Brian Burns, but I think more importantly, the trade that I think a lot of people look back on, and it, I mean, only a year, you know, since it happened, only a year apart from this whole actual trade, the Panthers got the number one pick from the Bears, and the Panthers, obviously, they wanted a quarterback. Now, in that trade, they had the option to give up Brian Burns, Derrick Brown, or DJ Moore. They opted to give up DJ Moore. Now, as I told you guys, they got the number one pick with the intent of drafting a rookie quarterback. You would think, now, given the circumstances of the Panthers offensively, they don't have much firepower. So you would think, you draft a rookie quarterback, you would like for him to have a nice weapon in DJ Moore. No. The Panthers traded DJ Moore, opted to trade DJ Moore, kept Brian Burns. Okay. They knew Brian Burns' fifth-year option was coming up and approaching, so they knew they had to pay him. They refused to pay him. And then they just end up trading him literally a year later for less value, for significantly less value. This is an absolute, like, since David Tepper, the new owner who has recently bought the Panthers, since he's taken over, he's done a shit job with this team. So, I, you know, this Brian Burns move, you know, it's going to be the one, it's going to be the last one that I cover. The last big time move, I'll be sure if there's any other big time moves that happen, you know, I'm really curious to see where Aaron Jones land. Right. But, and I know there's so many moves that happened that I didn't get to, like Gardner Minshew, Michael Pittman got, you know, an extension from the Indianapolis Colts and so forth. But man, I saw this Brian Burns move and I said, I have to harp on this point. I have to, because this is a complete travesty that the Panthers just let slip away. It's like you traded away DJ Moore, who I think, given his play style, really versatile receiver, really good. But given his play style, he's kind of like tailor fit for a young quarterback. And that could have really, really helped Bryce Young. Like Bryce Young this year looked like a disaster. And that could have really went a long way in helping Bryce Young. Instead, they opted to keep a guy that they knew or that they had second thoughts about paying. That was the prime opportunity to move off a guy who you had second thoughts on paying, right? The opportunity presented itself. And the Panthers absolutely squealed and they shit the bed. They wet the bed with this deal. They wet the bed with this deal. Now, if you're the Giants' perspective, I mean, this is, like I said, you fleeced them. You fleeced Carolina because this dude was once Brian Burns. He was worth two firsts because the Rams were willing to give up two firsts. And what did I tell you guys? What I've been telling you guys all episode, you're only worth what someone is willing to pay, right? You can be like, I'm worth this, I'm worth that. You're only worth what somebody is willing to pay. And the Rams were worth, they were willing to give up two firsts. So he was worth two firsts. Giants get him for a second and a fifth round pick. So, I mean, they gave the monster deal. And, you know, Kayvon Thibodeau, Dexter Lawrence, right? And now you add Brian Burns to that mix. They got something. You know, they got something on the defensive line. You know, still the Giants still had a rough day with losing their most productive guy on offense and Saquon Barkley. But defensively, that defensive line looks pretty good. It's formidable. But I still feel like the Giants kind of feel like meh. They kind of feel stuck, and a lot of it has to do with the quarterback spot. We don't know what's gonna happen. We don't know what it's gonna look like. But man, the Panthers, man, like they really, really dropped the ball. Looking back, on last year's deal. Right. Now, like, here's the thing. Here's the double whammy. They traded for the number one pick, right? And it's bad enough that at the dude that you took at one and Bryce Young didn't look better or didn't even look remotely close to the dude that was taken at number two in CJ Stroud. So they got to live with the fact that if they were to do it all again and have the number one pick, they wouldn't take Bryce Young. They would take C.J. Stroud. But then secondly, in acquiring the number one pick, you had to give up D.J. Moore. But I bet now they would regret giving up D.J. Moore. And instead, they would give up Brian Burns, a guy who eventually they wouldn't pay. Crazy. Crazy, 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 crazy times. But I'm going to wrap this bad boy up here. I hope you guys enjoyed. I know this episode is going to be it's going to be pretty long, but NFL, that's NFL free agency for you. And I didn't even get to all of the moves. Austin Ekeler to the Commanders. I like the scheme fit with Kingsbury. I like it a lot. I mentioned Michael Pittman going to the Colts. I think I mentioned Gabe Davis going to the Jags. Talked a little bit about the quarterbacks. Yeah, so I covered the big moves. Josh Jacobs to the Packers. Josh Jacobs to the Packers was the most surprising move of free agency, like, for me. Like, that was the most surprisingly good move, right? That was the most surprisingly good move because the Packers already had a pretty good running back room, right? Aaron Jones, really good. Banged up on the older side, a little expensive. So they signed Josh Jacobs, move off of Aaron Jones, right? And now they have Josh Jacobs, who's a bit younger, not too long. I mean, the year before last, not this past year, but the year before last, he led the league in rushing. So this is a talented back, and he could essentially do it all. To me, Josh Jacobs is a more complete player than, I would say, a Saquon Barkley, right? But that's gonna be all, folks. Always remember, two choices, one decision. You guys won't hear my voice up until the end of the week again. So sorry about that. I'm going on a trip. I hope you guys enjoy, though. I hope you guys enjoy this episode. And I'll be sure to answer your questions and comments on a separate episode. So stay tuned for that. Be on the lookout for that. But enjoy.